94 WGTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from the first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program online at carthage.edu/aspire. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
This is the Thursday Morning Show, and I'm Gregory Berg. Last week on the program, we heard from Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. Today, we're going to get updates from the other two colleges in town. First, the University of Wisconsin-Parkside with Chancellor Debbie Ford. Later in the hour, from Carthage College with President John Swallow. I'm very, very pleased that on today's program, we can spend time with Chancellor Debbie Ford from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And we spoke with Chancellor Ford towards the beginning of this COVID-19 situation, and I thought it would be good to touch base with her once again and see how things are going at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, trying to weather this unprecedented situation, and also what it's like to try to make plans for a very uncertain future. It's not an easy time for anybody, whether you're in the world of business or education or government or medicine. Challenging times for all of us. But anyway, I really appreciate Chancellor Ford making time in a busy and unpredictable schedule to be part of the morning show. Welcome back to the program, Chancellor Ford.
Well, Greg, thanks for having me, and thanks for giving us an opportunity to share what's happening here at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside and your summary of it being unprecedented and uncertain times is an understatement for where we are, but could not be more proud of our faculty, staff, students here at UW-Parkside and how they are showing their resiliency.
We talked about this the first time we had our conversation, so I don't think we need to go in a lot of detail, but maybe just briefly sketch the kind of questions that were confronting you and your closest advisors at the outset of this, and particularly how a school that is part of a larger university system, what kinds of decisions were for you to make, and how difficult it was to make decisions at the outset.
Well, I think the first two questions were, how do we protect the health and safety of our campus community? And the second was, how do we have continuity of the delivery of our academic mission? And we have set those as our two primary goals. And the third goal is to help flatten the curve of COVID-19. And then the fourth goal is, how do we leverage the amazing talent and the assets that we have in our university community to support the broader community as we all confront and really fight COVID-19. But to focus on the first two, we have to and must continue to protect the health and safety of our campus community. And that's our primary goal. It is our primary goal at all times, but it is certainly heightened during this time of COVID-19. And then we had to decide how best to deliver our courses for the remainder of the semester. We were just about to go on spring break when we made the decision to extend spring break. and then the decision to move all of our courses to a virtual environment. Very, very proud that our faculty, they were ready on March the 30th when we launched relaunched our semester. And then our students, even though some of them do not like online learning, they really are working hard and trying to complete the semester successfully. And that's the key.
If we were to walk around the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside right now, which is, I think, where you are right now, if I'm seeing the background correctly, what would we see or who would we see? I mean, just how deserted a ghost town is the campus as we're speaking today?
Yeah, the campus is really quiet. I do try to come in once a week, meet with my assistant, social distancing in place, but there's some things that you have to do in person, and so I'm here usually on Fridays. But the campus is very, very quiet. But we do have folks that are working. We have some things that need to continue, some of our preventive maintenance and some of the work on campus. We have about 80 students that are residing in our residence halls. Most of our students have moved home or to other locations, but we do have 80 students here as they finish up this semester. And we do have some folks that do check in. But it's quiet, it's too quiet. And my hope is that we'll be able to have most of our folks back, but of course with the right safety provisions in place.
Very good. Help us understand kind of the division of responsibility and authority when it comes to UW-Parkside versus the overall UW system. And particularly going forward, are there certain decisions that get made at a system-wide level versus other decisions that you and your advisors get to make about Parkside? I mean, how much autonomy are you and your counterparts given in a situation like this?
Well, I think that's the one thing, one of the great values of being part of the University of Wisconsin system is that we are autonomous institutions, but we follow the policies that are set by both the University of Wisconsin System Administration and the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents. How some of those decisions are made, and I think we have the autonomy and responsibility and flexibility to make those within the context of our own institutions in most cases. As we look at decisions around how we will staff during the summer, that is based on each institution's needs because institutions are making different decisions for the summer. All of the campuses did make the decision to move the courses online and to have students move back home from their residence hall environments. The other great value of being part of the system is that we can learn from one another. We are sharing best practices, and I would say that that extends beyond UW system. Had an opportunity to meet with our colleagues in higher ed yesterday from the Milwaukee region, and we were all on the call and sharing what we were doing, how we were doing scenario planning for both summer and fall courses, and also sharing resources that might be helpful as we consider all the decisions that we need to continue.
By the way, would it be fair to say that pretty much all of the various schools within the UW system are operating at essentially the same way right now with nearly everything online and with campuses all but deserted? Or are there exceptions to that, maybe up north where the numbers are not quite as serious as they are down in this region? Do you have some sense of that, of how this looks at other UW schools across the state?
Yeah, I would say that all of us have prioritized the health and safety of our campus communities and the delivery of our academic mission right now. And in order to do that, we are limiting access on campus, but we can't say that we are closed because we are not closed because we continue to deliver our academic mission. Varies on how many students might be in residence across the system, but we are trying to provide for their needs if in fact they were not able to return home or really didn't have any other options. But Most of the campuses, I would say, are very quiet. But there are folks that are outside. So I did hear some folks playing disc golf earlier today. So my office is near the disc golf course at Parkside.
There you go. One of the intriguing things about this situation is that you have a wide array of academic disciplines represented, all of which are having to move to this online delivery of material, which I should think is maybe a somewhat simpler matter for certain areas versus others. I wonder if you could just speak to kind of the wide range that a university is in terms of what it offers and what it is trying to continue to offer during this COVID-19 situation.
Well, certainly at UW Parkside, we have four colleges: the College of Arts and Humanities, the College of Social Sciences and Professional Studies, the College of Natural and Health Sciences, and the College of Business, Economics, and Computing. And we and our faculty, and I give them so much credit for their creativity, how innovative they are being, but also how they are supporting and helping one another. Because not everyone was familiar with the online teaching platform called Canvas here at UW-Parkside. And so we've had some folks mentoring each other. And when you think about creativity that our folks are doing, and our dean of the College of Arts and Humanities has reported to us that all of the performing arts, theater, music, and art, they figured out ways to deliver the curriculum and to be able to assess learning. It may not be the way that they were doing it before spring break, but they have certainly figured out ways. Our folks in the sciences have figured out ways to help students conduct experiments. They may not be doing the exact experiment. The faculty may be demonstrating that, but the students are then doing the analysis and responding, or they're using online tools that are available because today in the virtual environment, there are more tools available. One of the outcomes, I may have talked about this on your show last time, but one of the outcomes from this is that now all of our faculty are introduced and using the online teaching technologies that we have available. And I think that teaching and learning for the future will be enhanced, even when it is face-to-face, because we will return at some point. But now our faculty will be able to use all of these tools together. And one more point I would make is some of our students in a classroom setting, face-to-face classroom setting, they are not comfortable speaking out in class, but they are comfortable speaking out in an online chat. For whatever reason, they may do better in writing rather than verbally. And so this is a way to adapt to the more learning styles that our students bring to the campus. And I think, again, that array of disciplines, that's what makes a university, and proud, very, very proud of how we are executing on making sure that our students are learning and all of us are learning.
Very good. I wanted to mention that last week on the program, I spoke with Dr. Jonathan Shaler, and this past Monday spoke with Dr. Sarah Pena, who teaches Spanish, and they both had very positive things to say about the support that they received from Parkside. And I think it was Professor Pena who basically said something that it really takes flexibility to be a good teacher. It's probably one of the paramount qualities that every good teacher needs to have to some extent. And so that quality of flexibility and creativity is being, in a sense, taxed to the max right now in this COVID-19 situation. And I'm sure you're seeing that play out again and again.
Oh, absolutely. And I would add adaptability, right? And we have to be responsive to our students in new ways. We're not seeing them. Are they engaged with us? If they're not, how are we connecting them to the resources that might be available? If they're uncomfortable or unfamiliar with the technologies, I think most students are more familiar oftentimes than we are, but also the other support services that are available to our students and our faculty and staff during this time. We have made it a priority to make sure that those resources continue to be available in a virtual environment. And it's a priority for us to stay connected with both our students and our faculty at this time.
Needless to say, this current semester is online right to the very end, and among other things, that also, of course, impacts graduation. So what can you tell us about the way in which the matter of graduation commencement is going to be handled? Is something going to be happening at that time that would have been commencement, or has that been postponed to a later date? How is that being handled at Parkside?
Well, first of all, commencement day is one of my favorite days at UW-Parkside, and we would have been celebrating another record-setting class and the largest number of students to receive master's degrees at UW-Parkside in our history on May 16th, 2020. But in alignment with all of the guidance that's out there, we are not holding a ceremony, but those students who will complete all of their coursework, they will be graduates of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and their degrees will be certified effective May. Or for those students finishing in August for August, we have decided that we will be hosting the largest commencement ceremony in our history in December of 2020. And of December 10th, 11th, 12th. We are already set up for December commencement, and we've decided to invite those who have earned their degrees in May and August to join that ceremony. Many of our students are local, and even those students from out of town or from around the world hopefully will be able to join us for that ceremony. And we hope by then we're able to fully be able to address the impacts of COVID-19. And Greg, we will, we're ramping up towards that. The provost and I made a video, and Ranger Bear made a special appearance to have our graduates save the date for December 10th, 11th, and 12th. And we're also have taken our senior send-off, which is a special few days where we bring our students together. They order their caps and gowns, they order their class rings, they complete some campus surveys and some paperwork that they need to do. But that is all now in a virtual environment for our graduating students. And then we have a few messages over the next several weeks that we'll be sending to our graduates. And we've asked folks to join us in providing messages to the class of 2020. And we have a few special people who will be congratulating the class of 2020. And we're excited about that.
Very nice idea. As we close, we need to talk about the future, which, as you've already alluded to, is at this point still uncertain on several different levels. And of course, that makes the matter of planning for the future all the more difficult. So tell us what you can about, first of all, what the plans are for the summer, and at this point, what the plans are for the fall, and maybe not so much the specifics of what the plan is as much as give us a sense of what it is like to try to formulate future plans in this kind of situation that is fraught with so much uncertainty.
Yeah, so I think a couple of things first. First, we have a team here looking at how we have a smart restart in terms of opening the campus back up. Again, it's limited access right now. The doors are locked. You have to be on a list to get in. So we have a team looking at a smart restart and what that would take to resume administrative operations on campus. We have made the decision to deliver our summer curriculum in a virtual environment. Many of our courses were already virtual.
Sorry about that. That's my dog. Go ahead.
That's working closely with our faculty to make sure that those who need to transition their course to the summer environment, we can do that. We have also canceled events on the campus through June 30th, and many of the events that are hosted by external groups, they have also canceled. So through June 30th, we've made the decision that no events on campus. That does not mean that we won't resume administrative operations, and we're right now in alignment with the governor's safer at home order and the guidance from the CDC. In terms of fall, you know, I wish we had a crystal ball that wasn't so cloudy. We really are considering a lot of scenario planning and what ifs, and we'll be working closely with campus leaders and in partnership with both higher ed leaders and the University of Wisconsin system to make informed decisions as we go forward. But our hope would be that we will be back as we started this spring semester and we started last fall, but we are considering multiple options and we'll always keep the health and safety of our campus community and the delivery of our academic mission as priorities.
I appreciate the point that you made earlier, which honestly I hadn't really stopped to think about, the fact that it's nice to not be enduring this situation alone. And there is at least a measure of, I don't know if it's comfort exactly, but this is something that is not unique to UW-Parkside, of course. It is something being faced by all of the universities that are part of the UW system. And for that matter, it's being dealt with schools like Gateway right down the road and Carthage right over there. I mean, all of us are experiencing very much the same challenges, albeit in our own ways. I mean, not that every school is interchangeable, but I appreciate the fact that you have come to probably a deeper appreciation for what it means to be part of kind of the larger world of higher education, and for you to be grappling with these questions along with colleagues and counterparts who and with whom you can share and exchange ideas.
Absolutely, and I think as we across higher education, both here locally, regionally, statewide, nationally, think about this, we can learn from one another. But one of the best things about American higher education is the diversity of offerings and the diversity of institutions. And we all have to make decisions within the context of how we deliver our mission and to whom. And so I think that's one of the great values that we have. We can learn from one another, we can collaborate, but we also have to think about it and execute it in terms of our own context. And Greg, you talk about how we're all in this together. And I think it's really important for me to make sure that I deliver a special shout out and thank you to our first responders and our healthcare workers as they continue to just do amazing work. And we are here to support them and just show a lot of gratitude for all that they are doing to keep our community safe and to keep folks well.
Very well said. Chancellor Debbie Ford from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Chancellor Ford, it was great to connect with you again today. Best wishes to you and everyone at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And thank you for being part of the morning show. We look forward to talking with you again soon.
That's great. Thank you, Greg.
You're listening to the morning show on WGTD-HD. Your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. And now I am delighted for the next few minutes to be speaking with Dr. John Swallow, who is the president of Carthage College. And Carthage, just like Gateway, just like UW-Parkside, is doing its best to weather the unexpected challenges that are part of this COVID-19 crisis. And there are all kinds of ways in which this ultimately, as with Gateway and Parkside, is both a difficult situation and yet also an inspiring story of rising to really vexing challenges again and again. And so we're going to hear about that from the perspective of Carthage and its president. Dr. Swallow, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Great to be back with you, Greg.
So first of all, let's reflect on the amazing last few weeks and all that has changed for students and faculty and staff alike. And maybe you could just say a word about how this transition has gone from your perspective and what has gone especially well, and maybe some areas that were maybe trickier than were initially anticipated.
Yes, the last few weeks have been a series of transitions. I'd say that we've performed remarkably well. Faculty and staff are really pulling together at this time. I know that it is hard and it begins to wear on people, the transition to remote instruction, sitting through multiple Zoom calls. There are some emotional and psychological aspects to this that we weren't all prepared for. But when it comes to the students on campus, we've had a steady work on moving student belongings out. So something that can get forgotten in all this is that we announced to our students that they wouldn't be coming back for in-person instruction during spring break. So they had left thinking that they would come back, of course, and all of their belongings were in the rooms. And it seems to make sense to provide ways for them to move out so that those belongings aren't in there indefinitely. So we worked hard on that, had a move out week where we practiced a lot of social distancing. Based on the last digit of the room number, we were able to have families come at different times, no more than two people at a time. We had an express checkout process where you just drop your key and a form in a little envelope, and you don't have to be, you know, exchanging anything by hand with someone else. Families really appreciated that. It went smoothly. Some days had more families than others, but I think they, in fact, although of course there's some sadness to all this, nobody wanted this sort of end to the semester. That particular move-out day was meaningful to families, many of them, because they did want something to do. They were happy to get in the car. And normally, you know, no one's excited about moving in or out to a dorm room, but this was a chance to be back on campus, walk up and down, see Kissing Rock, interact with a few staff. And so that was very pleasant for a lot of people. I was able to talk to some of them, of course, at a distance.
Right.
But glad to do that.
I just want to add parenthetically that I asked probably two-thirds of my voice students that I am teaching in virtual fashion live on campus or lived on campus, and to a person, they all reflected what you just described. I mean, a process that was painless and well-organized and all that it needed to be. I mean, and I was just so glad to hear that because, it's the kind of thing that is not ever had been done exactly this way before. And if it hadn't been carefully conceived and carefully planned, it really could have been a nightmare, piled on top of what's already kind of a nightmare in some ways. And so I was just so happy for them and relieved for them and proud of Carthage for carrying that off so brilliantly.
I've been very proud too. Good and careful organization really pays off. So that was our kind of first round. So we're down to fewer than 400 rooms still with stuff in them. So, which is to say 1,300 students have come and moved their stuff out. So we'll have one more move out weekend, May 1 to 3rd. And so that should get us to where we need to be. And then we still have about 30 students still living on campus. They're all in the tower. We run shuttles to grocery stores. The tower has some kitchens. We also provide some food through Einstein's Bagels on campus. But that's also been a process of helping a lot of the students go back home. And then the ones that are remaining really don't have any good options. And so we're continuing to have them live on campus.
Very good. What is your sense of how the transition to online teaching and learning has gone?
I think faculty and students have settled in. We continue to have waves of reach out methods to students. A week ago, we divided all the students up into some faculty and staff, about 40 students apiece, and then we all tried to contact them, make sure they're doing fine. We also, of course, track when students may not be showing up to class virtually. But by and large, I won't say it's pleasant or that it's not wearing students down, even under excellent conditions. But I would say that we're all working through it. It's one thing I love about Carthage faculty, staff, and students, the sort of a roll up your sleeves attitude. So for all that's happened, now we're going to make it through the end of the semester. So we continue to provide resources and services to students who may need it, who find themselves in unusual situations, either at home or just coping, having to have different study habits, having to think about it's not easy to have group projects. Even with all this technology, not everybody has the same technology. Not everybody has the same access. But by and large, I think it's going, frankly, much better than I think anyone would have thought if a year ago you said suddenly the campus is going to go online for half semester. I think we're doing really well.
Right. I can say for myself, I, as someone who's not particularly fond of technology and tends to use very little of it in my teaching, I approached all this with some wariness, and I've actually been very pleasantly surprised and really enormously relieved that it has been such a stimulating experience. And I certainly heard from other colleagues, not only at Carthage, but counterparts at other schools, that the experience of having to do this for many of us has kind of, in a sense, reshaped us as teachers and maybe helped us kind of reformulate our own priorities in terms of what it means to be a teacher and what is most important to our teaching.
That's right. So I think faculty and students now have experience with a wide variety of what you might call delivery methods or just pedagogies. And so, for instance, the work that had been happening for some years in different classes around flipping a classroom where the acquisition of straight content might happen outside of the class time with a video or the textbook, and then you prioritize the in-person back and forth discussion using class time. You know, that's one route that I think more people are experimenting with during these weeks. And it does seem at this moment better than trying to gather together all at 11 o'clock on a Thursday simply to watch a video together. I mean, we could do that anytime, right?
Yeah.
And so it is interesting to see what comes to the top for the most important aspects of teaching.
We're speaking with Dr. John Swallow, the president of Carthage College, and finding out, first of all, his perspective on what has transpired over the last several weeks and what is ahead for Carthage. And of course, towards the end of May should be commencement, and in some respects still will be commencement weekend, but not the kind of commencement weekend that any of us have experienced in our lifetimes, actually. Tell our listeners about how you and your advisors have wrestled with the question of commencement and ultimately what has been decided at this point.
Yes. Well, we're definitely going to mark the day because officially speaking, students are graduating. So we definitely want to mark it, offer opportunities for them to send in a picture, put together a video that people can watch all at the same time. So it'll include speakers, me, students, faculty, and staff. We'll try to lean toward a more abbreviated version because, as you know, these things can be quite long in person. I'm not sure how those would feel if they were just as long by video, not in person. But we are also absolutely committed to having an in-person event later, sometime next year, whenever we're able. And that could be, frankly, as late as May of 2021. We could have just one massive commencement next year for those who want to walk across the stage. We want to do everything possible about that. But we really didn't want to miss this moment, knowing that how important it is to everyone and really providing a moment of uplift to celebrate the end of a great 4 years of a challenging semester of some great work, senior theses, performances. There's all sorts of reasons to not postpone that celebration, but I know that we all want to be in person and have a handshake, and we'll find a way for that to happen too.
Very good, very good. For the summer term, a lot tends to go on at Carthage, but a whole lot of it has nothing directly to do with Carthage. It's outside groups who come in, of course, to utilize the campus, and of course, pretty much straight across the board, all of that is canceled, correct?
That's right.
The campus, for all intents and purposes, is not open to the public through the summer, with the exception of walking the grounds.
That's right. We want to be open, and we would do anything we could to have a conference or a camp, but until we're clear that we can do so safely and legally, then we're basically in a shutdown mode. Our TARC, for instance, there's just no activity at all. We have offered our residence halls and some facilities to first responders and others who may need them for quarantine purposes. But so far that's been extremely limited, though we're just in conversation about that in case that's needed. But yes, We want everyone to expect, to try to put a fine point on this, to expect that there's really no opportunity to do anything on campus currently under the Safer at Home ordinance, and perhaps through almost all the summer. But we also want to be nimble, Greg. If we find out that there's a safe way to be open July 10th and get some soccer camps back going, we're going to do everything we can to pull that off.
I can imagine how what a happy sight that would be to see some young soccer players or string players or whatever it might be on our campus again. Summer teaching will proceed as it as right now, I assume. Summer classes all taught virtually.
Right. Yes, virtually. We'll still have a schedule. We may, in fact, have more classes than before. We're talking to some faculty about that. Provide more options to students. But yes, that's the plan for the summer.
Right. Well, speaking of plans, it is certainly challenging enough under normal circumstances to plan for the future. I just can't even quite fathom how difficult it is to be planning for a future that, at least in some respects, is shrouded in such doubt. I mean, it's just hard to know exactly where all of this is going. So first of all, just in a kind of a general way, maybe you could talk about how you and your advisors are trying to approach this whole matter of planning for the future and what that sort of process at the moment looks like. I don't mean what the plans are so much as the process of planning, what that looks like right now.
Right, right. Planning for planning and the plans themselves. Yes, it is an extraordinary moment. And I start by wanting to acknowledge, first of all, our strong wish, our strong desire that we'll do everything we possibly can to be open safely for faculty and staff in the fall. How many that will be, I don't know. When exactly that will happen, I don't know. But we're absolutely committed to that. If there's any way to do so, we will choose all the means necessary. At the same time, I think we all see when we read the news of ideas about what might be done to prevent the spread of the virus or treat it better continue to change. And then there are more and more creative ideas all across the country. Should we start late? Should we have 7-week block classes, but maybe only take them 2 at a time? Should every class be both in person and virtual in case someone has to be quarantined? Should we have the in-person part be separated no more than 10 students at a time in a classroom for social distancing? It's just mind-boggling. But I comfort myself in all this in that it's April. It's still April. And there will be lots of great ideas over the summer, no doubt, from all over. And those ideas are free. Everybody shares them. And so it's actually, unlike a business that needs to figure out a way to open, you know, next month, we have some time. So our best work, I think, is twofold. Our best work is doing some scenario planning. Like, okay, let's say we were going to start a month off. What would that look like? Not so much because we know that's going to be true, but because we want to play out all the connections, all the things we would do, all the things, ways in which we would be prepared. And then we're kind of learning how to be really nimble. We're learning how to be able to act when the moment comes. So that's the first part, is that running through some examples of scenarios and getting everyone up to speed on what they would do, just so that they're practiced. And then really committing to the kind of lock your arms and do whatever is needed when the moment comes, probably in August, where we got to make a call. It's probably going to be a very difficult call, a more complicated call than I've ever made before, but we'll make a call. And then we just need to know that we can count on all of our faculty and staff working together with the weeks that remain to pull it all together. And I am very confident about that. We have a great team. Faculty and staff at Carthage are just wonderful. We've seen that in the transition to remote education quickly. So the work of the summer for me is, yes, gathering ideas, helping people work through exercises of scenario planning so that they feel prepared. They've seen lots of connections. And then really continue to help people be confident that we can pull off a significant change rapidly if we need to. Because we simply won't know by the end of August really what even the list of possibilities exactly will be for the fall. I have some ideas, but I bet that by the end of May we'll have another list. And by the end of June we'll have another list. And so we don't want to get fixated on the exact scenarios yet, but we want to become as nimble and connected as possible to do things like, well, if we have to run orientation in person or online, what can we do today so that we could do either because we built the whole thing, let's say, online, and we could just turn it on or off. We're ready to go. So we don't need 4 weeks to plan it. You know, we've already done that. So it's that kind of thing. And there may be new kinds of efficiencies, just as you said with pedagogy, that might last for years to come, even in an in-person environment, just because we think, wow, we already built that platform. Now we're just going to use it every year. It's just wonderful. So that's the kind of work that I think we need to do this summer.
Yeah. In terms of some of these really big questions and really big answers or decisions, let's call it that, the big decisions or choices that ultimately will be made for the college, are most of those really big decisions made by you? I mean, are they solely your decisions? Not that you would just go into a room and lock the door and decide all these things in a vacuum, but ultimately, which decisions are yours to make versus decisions that are made in a sense by a team and or by the board of trustees or some other body? Without going into an enormous amount of detail, just give us a sense of where the buck stops with many of these decisions.
Right. Good question. Well, I'll first start by saying that, of course, the true decision makers that can have an enormous effect are our government, our health officials, and our families. They make decisions, and we want to make sure that they have the best choices they can and the safest environment. But God forbid, everyone was to think, you know, we can't go anywhere to college. That would just be unsafe, no matter what those colleges are doing. Hmm. Well, you know, there's not a lot I could do about that. Hmm. But leaving those aside, so when it comes to kind of making the choice for the parameters of the fall, what are we going to look like operationally? What classes will we offer? When will they be offered? How will we work with housing? How will we work with food service? What kind of distancing is required? How quickly can we go back and forth online? How many beds might we have for quarantine if necessary? All of that would be, I would say, in the second half of the summer and with a team. So it'd be me, the vice presidents, directors, kind of sitting down and saying, okay, by now we know enough to know that there are really only two or three options that make sense. So we got to pick one and play it all the way out. That's what we're going to do. So that would be very collaborative, trying to look at all the ups and downs, positives and negatives. There are always risks with any choice. If there are very significant budgetary changes that are needed, then I would certainly need to be talking with the board. We normally pass our yearly budget finally in October. We have an earlier one in May, a kind of preliminary look. I think we all recognize that so much is unknown now that the preliminary look in May is just, it's just a guess. So we would normally be settling in October for how the year would look from a budgetary point of view. This summer, I think the board will be gathering more often, whether it's for an official meeting or just for check-in calls, as things become clearer to see what things look like. And so there would be conversations there. Certainly if we're talking about a large amount of money shifting, but if it's a relatively small amount to, you know, work within typical parameters, that's why you have an administration. The board doesn't need to be so involved. So we're gonna have to negotiate that over the summer to see how significant things might change. Of course, I'm hoping that we're absolutely full. We have everyone back. We figured out how we're gonna be absolutely safe, whether we have testing or treatment or any of that. But I also have to be responsible to manage this in case there are some significant disruptions.
Right. I wonder if it is any consolation to you that our governor is an educator by background, and that that he is likely to be maybe more sensitive to the situation of colleges and universities, maybe more so than somebody who is not so much a part of the world of education. I mean, not that his love of education can sway him into, you know, making certain decisions apart from other important considerations. But is that give you any sense of confidence that he will be making some of his decisions for the state with the colleges and universities in mind?
Yes, and so there's a couple of aspects to that. So one is how the institutions function and how stressed they will be financially and otherwise. But also, and I would say this is even more important, is understanding what school closures, whether they're colleges or K-12, do for students. So on one hand, we wanna do everything we can to prevent the spread of the virus. On the other hand, just like businesses, it is not easy on students, and there are wide disparities. And, you know, just kind of imagining, you know, what it's like to be a first grader trying to read when you can't go to school, you're trying to do this online, and maybe you don't have technology at home. And I think that, you know, I think an 18, 19 year old can handle this a lot better, but there are real consequences to, you know, our schools and colleges were just not built for this. They're not built to have remote instruction. We all know that. And to have a real appreciation for how it affects the lives of students at all levels. That gives me a lot of confidence. You know, these are not abstract decisions. And there's not just one or two metrics that should drive everything. You know, people's lives are really considerably affected. And it reassures me that the governor's background is one where he's interacted a lot with students and faculty, you know, at a variety of educational levels.
Right. At the outset of your career in higher education, could you have ever imagined that you would find yourself in a scenario like this, making these kind of decisions under these kind of conditions? And what in your own personal background and array of gifts do you think is proving to be most helpful for you at this unprecedented moment for you?
Well, certainly I never anticipated anything like this. One thing about higher education is it tends to be stable from year to year. It's true students, you know, come in waves in the fall and the spring. And so, you know, there could be some ups and downs that are discrete rather than continuous. But, you know, whether you're talking about the demand for higher education, its place in society, what parents and students want, endowments, all of those things tend to make things, you know, smooth from one year to the next. There can be ups and downs, no doubt. But you don't ever expect in this kind of, you know, if you want to call it a business or industry, a disruption so quickly, so fast, of such magnitude. I know that's true in other industries. They expect that a lot. We're just not in one of those. And so, no, you know, I've spent essentially my whole life in schools, and they were all pretty stable. And that's not to say there weren't challenges. So what in my background might be particularly helpful? Well, I go back to two things. So one is I spent a long time as a mathematician working on some very complicated research problems. And you're trying to prove a new theorem and you don't know at the outset the right path. And so sometimes you actually have to play out a bunch of different paths and then try to make a judgment along the way. Is it worth pursuing this one a little further? Maybe I should work on the other one. Which is a lot like scenario planning. You don't know the outcome. You may never actually get it right. Now, in this case, we know something will happen in September, October. We just don't know what it is. But that kind of thinking, you have to imagine different paths, take some creative leaps. I'm not sure today how I'm going to get from A to B, but suppose I did get from A to B, then what would I do? So that is very helpful. And so in that way, I feel very comfortable with scenario planning. It feels like a kind of thinking I've done before. And then the other side of my background is as somebody who was an English major as well. And so, you know, you think a lot about the lives of people and you think about their points of view. And you also just become really comfortable when you're thinking about novels or poems with ambiguity. You have to be comfortable with ambiguity. That's actually where all the interest is. And so that's fine too. And so it's something to remember in this time, not to be totally discombobulated by the uncertainty, but to say that that's just part of the interest of it all. So we will find our way. We need to be calm, not more anxious than necessary. I know this is something we're all facing every day, but to just try to attain some inner peace about that. So those two things together, I think, you know, it's at least how I wake up every morning and feel that I can probably get through the day.
Very good. Well, Dr. John Swallow, I appreciate all that you've shared in this conversation. I really do appreciate it. And thank you so much. Wish you and all of your advisors the very best as we move forward from here.
Well, thank you, Greg. And thanks for doing these interviews. I think it's really helpful. Yeah, thank you.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, my interview with Benjamin Teitelbaum. His new book, War for Eternity, examines the worldview of Steve Bannon, who once upon a time was a very significant advisor to Donald Trump. Steve Bannon ascribes to an ideology which is known as traditionalism. It's a very specific ideology, which, among other things, rejects any notion of globalism, has a very, very deep suspicion of anything that smacks of globalism whatsoever. And it has shaped his worldview, and